Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Forge of Freedom podcast. I'm your host, Alex Uli, and this is episode 122 of the Forge of Freedom. Today, I'm going to chat with you a little bit about a case that the United States Supreme Court recently accepted for review. They granted cert or certiorari. It means they're going to hear the case in the fall of later this year, so in the October term. And the case is Garland v. Vanderstock. And the case is about the frame or receiver rule, or 80% lowers, or what are sometimes often by the government called ghost guns, which is a propaganda term. And I'll get into that here in just a little bit. But last week, April 22nd, the Supreme Court, as I said, granted review of this case. In the case, it's a case filed by the Firearms Policy Coalition, and also the Second Amendment Foundation is involved as well, but the Firearms Policy Coalition is the primary organization behind this case. And the case really is not a Second Amendment case. It's a case challenging administrative authority. And of course, we've talked about that. It's related to the topic of last week's discussion about what it means to be engaged in the business of selling firearms. And of course, we talked about the overreach by the ATF there and their administrative rulemaking authority. And really, this case is about the same thing. It's about the ATF. It's about administrative agencies in general going beyond their authority and stepping into the province of the legislature. Remember, we talk about this frequently on this podcast, about the separation of powers and how important that is to maintain a limited government. And of course, we're far beyond where the founders ever intended the government to be. But one of the worst violations of limited government, of the principles of limited government and the separation of powers, is this agency rulemaking, where the legislature delegates the enforcement of the laws that they pass to executive branch agencies like the ATF, like the EPA, like the FDA, and so on. And the problem is that these executive branch agencies are composed of unelected bureaucrats that take on a life of their own and take on authority that they were not given. And the legislature does very little to rein them in. Well, here, in this case, in the Vanderstock case, this hinges on the definition of a firearm. And the first thing we'll do is we'll look at actually the law itself, the United States Code, and that's 18 U.S.C. Section 921. And that's 18 United States Code, Section 921, and it's the definitions chapter. So I'm going to share that here on the screen. We'll see here momentarily, 18 U.S.C. 921. And if you look at the definition, it's subpart A3. It says the term firearm means A, any weapon, including a starter gun, which will or is designed to or may readily be converted to expel a projectile by the action of an explosive. B, the frame or receiver of any such weapon. C, any firearm muffler or firearm silencer. Or D, any destructive device. Such term does not include an antique firearm. And as I said, this Vanderstock case is really challenging this frame or receiver portion, because there are products that you can purchase called 80% lowers, which are the receivers or the frame of a firearm that you can purchase, which is basically just a chunk of metal. It's been machined to some degree, but requires machining, further machining, to finish the component of the firearm. And if you look back here at the definition, under federal law, and this is the law itself, this is not the ATF rule, this is the law that the legislature passed. It says, any weapon, including a starter gun, which will or is designed to or may readily be converted to expel a projectile by the action of an explosive. So that's A3A. And then B, the frame or receiver of any such weapon. And so what the ATF is trying to say is that these incomplete frames or receivers, these 80%, and they're called 80% lowers oftentimes, at least the components that are made for AR-15s, because they're machined approximately 80% of the way, that which implies obviously that it would require 20% additional work, additional machining to complete the component, to complete the frame or receiver. But looking here, you see it says any weapon which will or is designed to or may readily be converted to expel a projectile by the action of an explosive. That's subpart A. And then separately, B, the frame or receiver of any such weapon. And so what the ATF is doing is they are taking this language, may readily be converted, and they're applying it to part B. So they're taking language from part A and applying it to part B, saying that the frame or receiver that's being sold may readily be converted. And so that means these chunks of metal, they're saying, are firearms. And I know this sounds absurd, because it is, but that's the way that the ATF is classifying these incomplete components. They're saying because these frames or receivers may be readily converted, that they are, by definition, firearms. And that's just clearly not what the legislature says. It's not what they intended. If they had intended to say that, they would have included the readily converted language in Part B. And so that's what this is really about. In the ATF, they call them ghost guns because these chunks of metal that are incomplete frames, they're not even incomplete firearms, they're incomplete frames for firearms, are not serialized. They don't have a serial number. And so they're saying we can't track these incomplete chunks of metal because they don't have a serial number. And people can buy them without the serial number, finish making them into a firearm, and then people can commit crimes with untraceable firearms. That's their argument. Okay, but again, the ATF is not the legislative branch. They are an executive branch agency, and they cannot change the law. They cannot make the law. They are tasked with enforcing the law that the legislature passes. And that's it. And here, much like they did in the Engaged in the Business case that we talked about last week, they are clearly overstepping their authority into the realm of changing the law and effectively making new law. So, as I said, the Firearms Policy Coalition filed this case. The Fifth Circuit agreed. So the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals agreed with the Firearms Policy Coalition and said that the ATF was engaged in unlawful rulemaking and that their rule was not in compliance with the law. So based on that ruling by the Fifth Circuit, the Attorney General and the Department of Justice filed a petition for writ of certiorari with the United States Supreme Court, and the Firearms Policy Coalition also agreed, and won, even though they'd won at the Fifth Circuit, agreed that the Supreme Court should hear this case, but for a different reason. The Firearms Policy Coalition wants to rein in these executive branch agencies. And so the Supreme Court agreed, they considered the petition, and they agreed to hear the case in the fall. So this case won't be decided this year. They will set oral arguments sometime in the fall. There will be lots of amicus briefs, that is, briefs that support one side or the other. And the court will decide this case sometime in the spring of 2025. But this case, along with the case about being engaged in the business, and also the Loper-Bright case, which we've talked about before, which does not involve firearms at all, these cases are really about limiting agency rulemaking authority, and not even rulemaking authority, limiting agency overreach. That's really what this is. They are these unelected bureaucrats are overreaching their authority. And that's exactly what the founders were trying to prevent when they created the checks and balances of the three branches of government. So I'm hopeful, I'm optimistic that the Supreme Court will smack down the ATF here. And I'm hopeful that the Loper-Bright case, which will be decided this term, will also serve to rein in executive branch agencies. The other thing I want to mention here, obviously we've got this case, the Vanderstock case, which I'll link to the SCOTUS blog page for this, because you can see the issue there. You can also see links to a lot of the briefs that have been filed. There haven't been very many to this point, but there will undoubtedly be many more filed this summer. But I'll also link to the Firearms Policy Coalition website and the Second Amendment Foundation website with the petition for writ of certiorari. You can read for yourself what each side has to say. The other thing I want to mention before closing up here is, of course, the Rahimi case is to be decided by the Supreme Court sometime in the next month or two. I expect that it'll be released sometime in June. But as I said, this is not really a Second Amendment case. This is a case about the structure of our government and about the authority that the ATF has. And the Fifth Circuit judges here had some great language in their opinion on this case. They say, the ATF, in promulgating its final rule, attempted to take on the mantle of Congress to, quote, do something, end quote, with respect to gun control. But it is not the province of an executive agency to write laws for our nation. That was Judge Kurt Engelhardt. And he goes on, he says, that vital duty, for better or for worse, lies solely with the legislature. Unless and until Congress so acts to expand or alter the language of the Gun Control Act, ATF must operate within the statutory text's existing limits. The final rule impermissibly exceeds those limits, such that ATF has essentially rewritten the law. This it cannot do, especially where criminal liability can, and according to the government's own assertions, will be broadly imposed without any congressional input whatsoever. And then this is Judge Andrew Oldham. He says, the final rule is limitless, without qualification. It purports to regulate any piece of metal or plastic that has been machined beyond its primordial state for fear that it might one day be turned into a gun, a gun frame, or a gun receiver. And it doesn't stop regulating the metal or plastic until it's melted back down to ooze. The GCA, the Gun Control Act, allows none of this. And so I hope the Supreme Court agrees of course, as I've said, and I think that they will, but of course, as I've said on numerous prior occasions, this is what I want to end with. We can't rely on 9 people in black robes in Washington, D.C. to protect our freedom. Of course, I hope that they do the right thing, but ultimately, it's up to us to hold the government accountable, for us to be the final check and balance on a tyrannical government. And so, while we should advocate for the right outcome, while we should support organizations like Firearms Policy Coalition and the Second Amendment Foundation in fighting for freedom in the courts, ultimately, it's up to us. It's up to you and me. We can't rest on our laurels. We can't be complacent. We can't be apathetic. As Ron Paul, and I'll put this up on the screen, I want to share a quote in closing here. Ron Paul was a huge influence on me and still is for that matter. But he said, "May future generations look back on our work and say that these were men and women who, in a moment of great crisis, stood up to their politicians, the opinion makers, and the establishment, and saved their country." All right, everybody, I hope you learned a little something. I hope you can make a little bit more sense now out of this so-called ghost gun case that the Supreme Court has taken up in Vanderstock. As always, I'll link to all these resources in the show notes. If you did like the show, don't forget to like and subscribe to help us spread the message of freedom. You can find us on YouTube, Facebook, and Rumble, as well as all of the most popular podcast streaming platforms. You can also find me on X at Forge of Freedom and at forgeoffreedom.com. All right, thanks everybody for tuning in. And until next time, remember, you are the Forge of Freedom.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Forge of Freedom. Be sure to subscribe wherever you heard this podcast so you never miss a future episode. For more information or to connect with Alex, you can go to forgeoffreedom.com or follow him on Twitter at Forge of Freedom. Until next time, remember, you are the Forge of Freedom.